Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app, and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
I think that if I treat students with respect and try to listen and be supportive of them, students are going to be respectful back to me. And I think I've been able to get the best out of the athletes by taking that approach, by trying to be positive, trying to be encouraging, trying to be energetic and enthusiastic at practices, basically trying to create a positive environment.
And our guest this week is Jeff Holman. He is the boys and girls head varsity tennis coach at Haddonfield Memorial High School in South Jersey. How successful has he been? How about more than 2,500 career wins in his career? Jeff, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I know you just reached that 2,500 win mark recently, and I read that you're the most wins of any high school tennis coach, period, end of sentence. Do we know that for sure?
I'm not sure who keeps those records. I've heard that, but I'm not sure who is out there that could verify that information.
But 2,500, an incredible number. Like, what does that mean to you?
Well, it means I've been doing this for a long time, and I feel we've been pretty consistent as a program. We're not always great, but we're usually at least good. I've been fortunate that tennis, unlike other sports, has two seasons. So I coach the girls in the fall and boys in the spring. So I have twice as many opportunities as maybe coaches of other sports to play matches and win some of them. So having two seasons has been a factor, and I've appreciated the chance to coach both girls in the fall and boys in the spring.
How did you handle, because I talk to a lot of coaches in all sports, when they've got kind of like a milestone coming up that you know is coming and you know you're likely going to hit, it can be maybe not a distraction, but something that gets to the point where you just want to kind of do it and get it over with. Where did something like this fall for you as far as how you dealt with it?
I really didn't deal with it much at all. I don't really keep track of my win totals very carefully. One of my assistant coaches usually asks me at the end of every season what the record is. But again, I don't think I mentioned it to the players at all, and I just try to keep things business as usual and have the focus be on the players rather than on any individual records that I might achieve.
That being said, though, have you had any moments of reflection where you just kind of take maybe half a second and go, that's a lot of tennis. That's a lot of tennis.
Well, last week there was a brief ceremony at our home court, the Centennial Court Complex, and I saw a number of my players from previous teams, and seeing all those players does make me emotional just thinking back over many, many seasons. Although my first season was back in 1976, that doesn't seem that long ago. And just reflecting on how quickly those years have gone, it doesn't really seem possible. I've been coaching that longer, or even had a chance to accumulate that many matches.
So we're talking nearly five decades of coaching, all at Haddonfield.
Correct.
How have you, if at all, changed from 1976 to now?
I think I have a better understanding of some of the problems and issues that a head coach can face, and I've developed different strategies to address those issues over the years, so I think I can handle certain problems better than maybe when I first started. I think also I have a better appreciation for the most important aspect of coaching, which is not the wins or championships, but the impact we have on our players. So I think that that's helped me appreciate more just the opportunity to be still working at Haddonfield and still having a chance to interact with a lot of outstanding student athletes over many years.
Now, you're a Haddonfield alum, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Once you started at Haddonfield, because I know you teach as well within the district, right? Do you still teach?
I was a high school English teacher for 11 years, and then I transitioned to the middle school as a school counselor. Then I've been at the high school as a counselor since 1993.
Was the plan once you started at Haddonfield, like, I would like to set up shop and this is where I would like to be? Or were you not thinking, was it just, oh, it's fun to coach here, and then 5 years becomes 10, 10 becomes 20, and, you know, kind of life gets in the way? Like, was it a conscious effort that I want to make my mark here at my alma mater?
Well, when I graduated from college, I had no job, and it just so happened I was teaching tennis that summer at a local club, and there happened to be an opening developed in the English department, which was not available at the time I graduated. So I did apply for that position, and I was given the position. So that was fortunate. I was maybe at the right place at the right time, and I became an English teacher. When I first started, though, the boys and girls coaching positions were both filled. My high school coach, Ken Graber, was still coaching the boys' team when I started teaching, and there was a legendary girls' coach, Ellie Kine, was in charge of the girls' program, so there really wasn't a spot for me on the coaching staff in tennis. And then in 1976, in New Jersey, girls' tennis moved from the spring to the fall, and Haddonfield's girls' tennis coach, Ellie Kine, was also the hockey coach. So she had to choose between hockey and tennis, and she chose hockey. And that's what kind of gave me my opportunity to take over the tennis program. So really, just as a young teacher, I wanted to give back to the school in some way, and tennis was an area in which I had background, so that was maybe a natural opportunity for me to get involved in the school more fully.
So what is your on-ramp to tennis growing up? Like, was it a main sport for you as a kid as far as playing?
Yes. My dad was a college basketball player, and that was always my dream to play basketball at a high level. But I wasn't quite good enough or tall enough to make that dream happen. So I was involved in cross-country and basketball and tennis as a high school student. I had the most success in tennis, and I remained involved in tennis. So I did play on my college's freshman team, but was not able to make the varsity. But I did stay involved in tennis on a club level. And because of my background as a high school and college player, I did transition into coaching the high school team when that opening became available.
So did you always want to stay in athletics, like growing up? Did you always figure that you would play until you could play and then you would hope to coach?
Well, I think my main motivation when I started teaching was just to make a contribution to the school in whatever way I could. I was proud to be a Haddonfield alumnus, so proud to be working at that school. But I thought I could contribute more than just being a teacher. So whether it was as a drama director, as a club advisor, or whatever other positions might be available, tennis was just the extracurricular activity in which I had the most background and in which I thought I could make the best contribution. So that's what I think why I chose to get involved in that sport initially.
When you started coaching, do you feel like you were good at it? Like, did you understand everything that went into, you know, making a team successful and making yourself successful?
Well, I knew I was very motivated to do the best job I could on behalf of the students. Now, looking back at my first years, there are a lot of things I did that I'm sure were not good decisions. For example, when I first started, I had four courts and I had no assistant coach, and I thought that I could accommodate no more than 16 players on the team with four players per court with four courts. But in one of those early years of coaching, I cut a player who was number 17 on the team ladder, who ended up being a Division I player that's now one of my assistant coaches. So I realized that I really can't cut people. This really isn't in the best interest of the program or in the best interest of the student athletes. So I've kind of learned to accommodate a lot larger team. Like 2 years ago in the fall, for example, my team had 74 girls, which may have been the largest team in the country. So I take pride not only in having a strong varsity team, but trying to give all the girls in the program or all the boys in the program a very positive experience and make them, I hope, a lifelong tennis players.
So you started with the girls, and then I think a couple years after you started, you took the boys over as well. Is that correct?
Correct. I took over the girls in the 76-77 school year. I took over the boys the following school year, but it was the spring of 78 just because it was in the spring rather than the fall.
Do you approach the two seasons the same, or do you approach them differently?
I do a lot of the things the same. I've found that with the girls, there may be more emotional issues to deal with, so I have to handle the players differently than I might during the boys' season. But my basic system of setting up a team ladder, the way I structure practices, would be very similar, I think, for both the girls' and boys' season.
In addition to all the wins, you've got dozens of conference titles, state titles. Is there one or a couple that stand out, or are they all just kind of part of the, you know, the mosaic that makes up your career?
Well, I think there are maybe a couple that stand out. New Jersey, in addition to having state champions in every group, groups 1, 2, 3, 4, the groups are based on the size of the schools, used to have a tournament of champions when all the group champions would play off. And that was initiated, that tournament was initiated in 1980. So my girls team, which was the Group 2 state champion in 1980, also for the first time had an opportunity to compete in the tournament of champions against the other groups. Of course, the groups were, Group 2 is a relatively small group in terms of the size of the school. So we were competing against larger schools, and that team, the 1980 team, did win the first ever New Jersey state tournament of champions. So that was a special group just because that was the first in state history to have a tournament of champions in tennis, and Haddonfield had a team that year that was able to win that. We also won the tournament of champions with the girls twice in later times. The girls have won that title three times. The boys have not won that. But the boys, I think the one boys team I will always remember was the first team that won any state title, which was back in 1983. So I think whenever a team is the first to do something, that's a team that maybe carries a special place in your memory.
Does the excitement, the adrenaline of game day, watching your players compete, watching them get better, does it still feel the same now as it did when you started?
I think it does. Watching my players against a very challenging opponent and seeing which players are able to step up and meet the challenges that type of opposition presents is still very gratifying, still very exciting. Even losing a match, just to see that players on the team have played at a higher level and made improvement, that's more important than even winning the match if you see that you're playing well and players are, again, rising to the challenge. So that's still very exciting and very rewarding to see that occur in any competitive environment.
When it comes to when you played, how would you describe your style? Like, how did you approach playing tennis, and what made you good?
Well, I was maybe good by New Jersey high school standards. I was what might be called now a counter puncher. My game is more based on consistency rather than power. I wasn't a very flashy player. I just tried to get the ball back one more time than the other player did. And that was pretty successful for high school tennis back when I played in the 1970s. So I think that's always the foundation of good playing is to be consistent and not beat yourself. And once you develop that consistency, then you would, as the next step, develop more weapons such as a better serve, more powerful ground strokes, more effective net game. Those might be other dimensions you can add, but consistency is always the foundation. And that's what I would say we try to build our team on, is being consistent and making the other team work hard to win their points.
What was the biggest lesson you had to learn when you started coaching, you feel?
That's a good question. The biggest lesson, I think, was just, understanding how to coach different personalities, knowing that, which players need to be encouraged, which players, and maybe a coach needs to be harder on to bring out the best in them. Just sort of knowing what buttons to push to bring out the best in all the players. Also, just knowing, getting insight into how to form doubles teams and form teams that will be compatible from an interpersonal standpoint, and just being able to understand, you know, players' mentality to make those pairings in a way that would be most effective for the team.
So almost 50 years at Haddonfield. So I guess there's probably some families that you have had maybe three generations of players. Is that correct?
I think maybe not three yet, but if I stay around a little bit longer, I think we might have three. I definitely have a lot of second generation families. A few years ago, I had seven girls on one of my teams whose mothers had all played for me as well. And that may have been the highest level of next generation players. But I think it certainly is possible that I could get a third generation if I hang on a little bit later.
And does that give you pause in a good way to have a moment to think about that, that I coached all these kids' moms and now they are entrusting me to coach their kids? Like that's really, really, just from a human standpoint, that's really special.
Well, it is very gratifying just to see that the girls, when they play for me, they have evolved into very successful professional women. They're great parents, and just sort of seeing that maybe tennis in some small way contributed to their life success is, you know, that's one of the main reasons why I think any of us would stay involved in coaching.
All these years at Haddonfield, were you ever tempted to leave? Did you ever get phone calls like you're having success and somebody wants to at least see if you're interested in making the jump somewhere, or has it always just been Haddonfield?
Yeah, I can't remember anyone recruiting me, and I've been very happy where I've been, so I really haven't thought about leaving. I always just think about how can I become better at what I'm doing, whether it's now working as a counselor or working as a coach. That's always been the main focus, not to find a better situation, but just to kind of make the best of the situation that I'm in at this time.
Teaching, being a counselor, how have having those skill sets and doing those jobs simultaneously as a coach, how has it made you a better coach, you feel?
I think as a counselor, you really have to listen to people and, you know, try hard to understand them. Let the students know that you do understand them and that you can appreciate where they're coming from. So I think that, you know, listening skills are very important as a coach as well when you're trying to ascertain like what a player might be thinking at a certain time, or when you're trying to decide which teammates may be the most effective pairing as a doubles team. Having interpersonal insight and being able to listen to people, I think really is a very important skill that I would employ as a counselor as well as a coach.
I would imagine most, if not all, of your players you interact with during the school day, you know, back when you were teaching and now, you know, as a counselor. How does that help? Just maybe you get to see a different side of the kids and you maybe get to understand some of the things they're pursuing, or maybe some of the why a kid is struggling with something, and you learn, you know, kind of the aha moment of, oh, okay, now I get it with this. Like, how does that help maybe complete the picture of your players?
Well, I think it's important for me to be involved in the school in different ways. In addition to coaching tennis in the fall, in the spring, like, I chaperone most of the school musicals. I operate the clock at varsity basketball and wrestling matches. I try to have a high-profile presence at the school. I think it is helpful if student athletes get to know me outside of my counseling office, and I can, and people can see me and I can see them in different contexts. In some cases, they might excel more in some context than another. But I think keeping that high profile and interacting with players in different environments and different aspects of their school day has just been helpful in my forming relationships with them and kind of understanding what I need to do to bring out the best in people.
How has Haddonfield Memorial High School changed? I don't mean physically. I just mean, you know, you've had a front seat. That's, as we talk about, multiple generations, mm-hmm. multiple decades, what the world was like in the mid-70s, what the world's like now. Like, how have you seen the school change?
Maybe I'm just not that perceptive, but I don't really see the school has changed substantially. I think that maybe I've changed in the way that I view things. As I mentioned before, like, as a coach, I think I have a better understanding of what's more important than winning matches and winning championships. I think likewise, as a counselor and as a teacher, the students have always seemed to me to be very motivated with high goals in life, and They want people that support them and help them achieve their goals. And that, I think that's always been the case. I've always felt that Haddonfield is the type of community that instills excellence in the students and really all aspects of their lives. And I think that's something that's been a constant from the first day I started as a teacher back in 1974 to the current year, not 2025.
Do you feel like kids have changed over the years?
Again, I haven't seen big differences. I think that if I treat students with respect and try to listen and be supportive of them, students are going to be respectful back to me. And I think I've been able to get the best out of the athletes by taking that approach, by trying to be positive, trying to be encouraging, trying to be energetic and enthusiastic at practices, basically trying to create a positive environment, whether it's in my office as a counselor or on the tennis court as a coach. I think that if I, again, treat people the right way and treat students the right way, I'm going to get the type of results I'm looking for in terms of the students' growth and development.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Jeff Holman in just a few moments. But right now, want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to drive smarter with high-tech features and excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design plus exciting performance. Get a new vehicle you'll love. Check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HRV. See dealer for financing details. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Haddonfield Memorial High School varsity tennis coach Jeff Holman. You've got the two, well, I mean, it's all one tennis program, but you've got the boys and the girls. And I don't know how much this question's applicable because they're different times of the year. You've had all the success, but I'm sure there have been certain years where maybe the boys are up and the girls are down, you know, or vice versa. How do you handle that just from a kind of an emotional standpoint when one group's going in a different direction as the other, or because they're separate times of year, does it not really become an issue?
Well, again, I think when I first started, the girls were maybe at a higher level. As I mentioned, one of my first girls team won that New Jersey Tournament of Champions for the first time, and the boys were good back then, but not quite as good as the girls. I think initially I would view things that I was not doing as good a job or my boys team was not as successful. But then I think I've come to modify my thinking so that as long as that I'm working hard, the players are working hard, the players are improving, I can't really measure the success of the season by how many wins the team has or whether a team won or didn't win a certain championship. I'm now sort of measure the success of the season by the types of relationships I've established with the players, how much the players have developed. Have I given 25 or 50 or 75 players a love of a sport that they can play all their lives in a way that will keep them healthy throughout their lifespans? I think I'm just sort of focused on other things to judge whether a season has been successful or not. So it maybe would have bothered me a little bit more when I first started if a certain team, boys or girls, was not living up to the standards of the other team, but now I kind of judge the success of the seasons by different criteria.
You mentioned earlier, I think something like 75, 76 girls in the program in a single season. Like, how much of a challenge is it to just make sure everybody feels seen, feels like they're getting an opportunity? I mean, that's just a huge number. Mm-hmm. From a logistics standpoint, how hard is it to make sure that some kids don't get overlooked or just, you know, kind of lost in the wash with so many kids playing and so many kids pursuing?
It's a very, very challenging situation for a coach. I can never do it without having great assistant coaches. I have one paid assistant. And again, my paid assistant now is Phoebe Fiedlin, who was the player that I cut back when she was the number 17 girl on a 16-player team. And she later went on to play Division I tennis. So besides Phoebe, I have a number of assistants that are volunteers. So because of the assistant coaches, they're very dedicated and willing to work long hours. I typically would have maybe at one day's practice, three or four different sessions. Back when we had 74 girls, I'd have people come at different times throughout the day so that there always would be, you know, one of the coaches or I would take a small group, maybe 6 to 8 players, and work with them in that small group. So I always wanted to convey by that structure that every single girl on the team in that case of 74 girls was important, not only the varsity starters, but we wanted to foster the development of, again, a very player that's part of the program.
When it comes to coaching, at this point in your career, do you prefer practice or match day?
I think at a certain point in the season, like after the season's been ongoing for a while, I think I probably prefer matches just because the girls and boys as players are more focused when they're playing against someone from another team. I think early in the year when you're trying to establish a team identity and work out the lineup, the practices are very valuable to decide which players will play in which position and how can you develop a foundation that will lead to a successful season down the road. Later on in the season, like after a month or so, when the players have already been through a number of matches, it's more challenging to keep their focus in practice because some of the drills might seem older at that time. So it's I think that I would prefer the practices earlier and the matches later in the season.
Do you watch a lot of tennis? I don't mean from a scouting or practice standpoint, but just if you're home, do you enjoy watching tennis?
I do enjoy watching it. I don't find I have a lot of time to do that, just again because of all the different hats I wear at the school. And I want to be sure that my job is to coach when I'm maybe coaching three or four sessions a day to accommodate all the players. That can't interfere with my main job, which is being a counselor. Like I can't miss a deadline for someone's college application because I'm coaching tennis or because I just never got to that. So I find that I have to work for very long days in order to keep up with the requirements of not only my coaching but also my counseling job. I'm typically in the office till like 10 or 11 o'clock at night after a tennis practice or match, just making sure I respond to email, write my recommendation letters, return phone calls, do whatever has to be done to be an effective counselor. So because of that approach I have to my responsibilities, I don't find I have a lot of time to watch TV, whether it's professional tennis or anything else.
Within the game of tennis, what do you think is the most underrated skill a player can have? Maybe something that doesn't get the headlines, but if they've got it, it's kind of a secret weapon.
I'm not sure how underrated it is. This really the ability and to be resilient. Like any tennis match against a good, strong opponent will have some ups and downs. And the player that I think can not get too low when things are not going well or doesn't get too high and lose focus when things are going well is the player that's going to maintain the most success over the course of a season. So it's really that emotional resilience, I think, that can handle the ups and downs of a match. I think that's nothing that's a secret, but that's the quality that I think more than anything else, more than you know, great strokes or what looks like an impressive game on the outside, having that inner strength and emotional perseverance and resilience to be able to again, handle adversity and to overcome those types of setbacks.
Love to win, hate to lose. Which resonates more with you?
I'm not sure love to win or hate to lose. Either one would be exactly correct. I love to have players play well. I love to see them improve. I love to see them grow and to give their best effort on behalf of the team. You know, if we lose a match and everyone played great, you know, I'm disappointed about losing the match perhaps, but I'm feeling very good overall about the way the players performed. We might win a match and the players could be very sloppy in that match and I wouldn't feel very good about that type of match because of that level of performance not being up to the standard that I hope that the players would set. So I don't know whether I would say I love to win. I would say I love to see strong performances in victory or defeat. I love to see players grow and do their best and compete with pride and dignity and strong sportsmanship. I think if those things are happening, I'm feeling good about the state of the program.
Given everything you talked about, the coaching, obviously, but the work you've done teaching as a counselor, you mentioned, you know, working with the musicals, you mentioned running the shot clock and stuff like that. Like, I don't think you look at things through this prism, but do you ever think about the impact you've had on Haddonfield and the thousands of kids that you've had the opportunity to, you know, help push in the right direction in one way or another? Do you have those moments of reflection?
I think mostly on just the current time and how I can make the most impact on the students and players I have now. And again, maybe I have a student that's struggling in school, but is one of the stars on the basketball team, and that person sees me running the clock at basketball games, and that helps me make a connection. Or maybe, and one of my players has, you know, overcome some hardships and is, you know, playing especially well, and perhaps the support I give that player can help the person deal with some of the emotional issues in his or her life. My focus, I think, is more on the present. I'm sure that there may be moments when I think back if I run into a player that I coached or a student that I counseled or taught years ago, those types of encounters always bring back, you know, great memories and would make me feel nostalgic. So I would not say that I'm never thinking about the past or the overall impact of what I'm doing. But I think just because there's so many demands on my current time, I'd really have to be focused on the present to be able to fulfill what I'm doing now to the best of my ability.
Given your longevity and your success, how often are you approached for advice from other coaches, be it other Haddonfield coaches or other area tennis coaches that obviously either competed against you, respect you, know of you? Like, is that something you find a lot of people saying, how did you do this, or how would you approach this?
Well, I think because I've been coaching tennis for a long time, obviously, and I'm the president of the South Jersey Tennis Coaches, I do have a lot of opportunities to interact with other coaches, and sometimes, especially new coaches, may ask, like, how do you set up a team ladder or team lineup, or how do you handle certain situations? I think really all of us, whether we've been coaching for 50 years or 50 minutes, can all be helpful to our colleagues. We may have insights into how things can be done better. I can learn things from someone that has a lot less experience than I have. So it's always helpful, I think, to be at clinics or to be in at events where we're interacting with our peers and exchanging ideas. And there always are better ways to do things. And I think I'm always open to learning and growing. And I hope that maybe people have asked me for advice, as some have over the years, have found that my input maybe helps them approach things differently, as their input could help me revise the way that I might do things.
What makes Haddonfield Memorial special to you? I mean, you've spent virtually your entire life connected to it, and that doesn't happen unless it's obviously a place that just means an awful lot to you. So what makes it special?
Well, I think it became special to me when I attended there. I made some of my best friends in life there, and they've remained close friends to this time. That was the first school that gave me a job. I had no job when I first graduated from college, and that school was willing to give me a chance. And I'm sure there were moments in my early career where I didn't do things as well as I should have in the classroom or as a coach. But the school stayed by me and continued to give me opportunities. So I kind of feel the school has been very good to me and to my family. My brother and sister went there as well. My parents, you know, raised me in Haddonfield. So it's a town that I am very loyal to. I think I'm a loyal person in general. The people and institutions that have been good to me, I try to repay that and do the best I can to enhance their reputation. In the case of the school, in the case of the town, that's sort of one of my main motivations to do what I'm doing.
Given all that, do you have a favorite place in town?
My favorite place is probably the high school. That's where I spend the most time. I do a lot of walking just to kind of unwind and to relieve the stress of the week. So just, you know, different walking paths around town are also special. Just try to, you know, walk along roads where there's not too much traffic. But I can't really pinpoint one place in town more than another, other than the high school, right, where I spend a large number of my waking hours.
We talked it off the top that you recently won your 2,500th victory. Do you remember your first as a coach?
I don't remember the first one. I know it was in the fall of 1976. I do remember that year. The girls the following spring had won a state championship with the previous coach, Ellie Kine. So I was thinking that I was going to walk into that position and would work really hard and bring the team to the same heights. But we didn't quite reach that same level of achievement that the previous team had won. So I remember that was a good lesson for me, that you can't just assume that you're going to maybe achieve certain goals because of past success. I don't remember the first match of that 1976 season, but I do, again, think back to that season in general and reflect on how it doesn't really seem that long ago.
How do you feel tennis has changed? And I mean, overall. I don't just mean at Haddonfield. Like, what is focused on in the sport, you know, what is preached as far as the importance to having success. Like, do you feel like the sport has changed a lot over your career?
Are we talking about professional tennis or?
Just the idea of tennis in general, the sport of tennis in general. Like, you know, what skill sets and, you know, would a kid who had success on the 1976 team, just from a purely talent standpoint, would their skill sets translate to today, or has the game, what you need to have success, changed a lot?
Well, I think there always are going to be players that play different styles. You have some players that just will try to get every ball back and not hit the ball very hard, just try to outlast the other player. You always have some players that try to be very powerful and dominate the other players, you know, with that power. So there are always those different styles of play, and there are different philosophies of coaching, and you may get girls or boys that have been, you know, taught by different teachers that they may, you know, they may believe in different approaches, different philosophies. So that, I think that's always been a constant. There's nothing that's obvious to me that the people today are all different from how they were back, say, in the 1970s. There always were people that played different styles, and I think you have to adopt a style which is appropriate for your strengths and what your disposition might be. I think some people can concentrate well and they're better off trying to, like, just play long points and being very consistent, very steady. Some people are more impatient and rather play a more aggressive game where they can either win or lose points quickly. But I think that's always been the case, that you have these players that may adopt styles to suit their personalities, and you just have to try to help the players identify the style and modify that style to the extent that that can be most successful.
Is there anything left for you to accomplish? Like, is there any box left unchecked in your coaching career, something you'd like to do, where it's very obvious that, like, numbers and statistics and win totals don't matter? But is there anything you'd like to do before it's all over?
Nothing I can really think of specifically. I think my goal every season is just to become better, to learn from what I've done in the past, to always be as fair as I can, to, you know, develop and use different strategies that can most effectively raise the level of the team, to make the sport as enjoyable as possible for whatever number of players, whether it's 30, 40, 50, 70, or in the program. So there's really, like, no specific title or win total or anything like that that's a special goal right now. Just really every season the goal is to get better as a coach and to keep on making the experience as positive as I can make it for the Haddonfield High School players.
You've been doing this. We talked about, you know, some five decades at Haddonfield. You're obviously still very successful. You're obviously still very passionate. Do you have a exit plan of how many more years you'd like to do it? Are you not thinking that, even if it's just kind of roughly in your head, and anything, you know, is you feel comfortable sharing, like how you kind of see the rest of your career playing out?
Yeah, I don't really see a specific end date in mind. People have told me that, you know, when you should retire, and I haven't had that feeling yet. I come from a family where the men have died before they retired. So not that I'm hoping to die soon, but my granddad and my father were both involved in a career in the car business, and they both passed away before they had left the business. So, you know, I kind of believe, as long as I can be effective in my role and enjoy what I'm doing, you know, I have no particular plan in mind for I'm going to step aside after a certain number of years. As long as I enjoy it and feel that what I'm doing is somewhat effective, I don't have any plans in the immediate future to step aside from my position as a counselor and a coach.
Jeff Holman, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
Thank you very much, man. I really appreciate your time today.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Haddonfield Memorial High School varsity tennis coach Jeff Holman for coming in studio and being our guest this week. Now, if you like this show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow this show on X at @OneOnOnePod. You can follow me there as well at @MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.